This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
All of us use laptops and smartphones now. Everybody uses a laptop and/or a smartphone. And the question has arisen lately, is there room for a third category of device in the middle? Something that's between a laptop and a smartphone. And of course, we've pondered this question for years as well. The bar is pretty high. In order to really create a new category of devices, those devices are going to have to be far better at doing some key tasks. They're going to have to be far better at doing some really important things. Better than the laptop, better than the smartphone. Now, some people have thought that that's a netbook. The problem is, netbooks aren't better at anything. They're slow, they have low quality displays, and they run clunky old PC software. So they're not better than a laptop at anything, they're just cheaper. They're just cheap laptops. And we don't think that they're a third category device. But we think we've got something that is. And we'd like to show it to you today for the first time. And we call it the iPad.
It is Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandu. As you just heard, that was Steve Jobs. Almost exactly 10 years ago, he did that launch of the iPad on the 27th of January, 2010.
No, it's quite incredible. And just hearing his voice, I mean, especially in MSP, we were talking about digitally recreating actors. And you wonder how long it will be before there is a CGI version of Steve Jobs heading up Apple.
Yeah. So, 10 years ago, Steve Jobs and Apple introduced the world to the iPad. And it was by his own admission, in that clip, it's the third category of device that sits somewhere between a smartphone and a laptop. Initially, there were people who was talking about, it could be the netbook. But Apple's answer was slightly different 10 years ago. It was this 9.7-inch tablet that allowed you to hold the internet in your hands. And they were really gunning for that, new category of device. And also, I think, I remember when we were talking about it, it's like, is there a space, right? Because you've got the smartphones, the iPhones were coming into place, laptops were coming into place. Why would you need another kind of device? And in fact, we were not the only ones who were kind of mocking the iPad. And article from Wired actually labeled it a little bit more of a giant iPhone, which was something that people described it.
Yeah, and it was at that point. I mean, it didn't have its own functionality. And I've had a lot of iPads over the years. I'm just thinking I've probably had at least 10 iPads over those 10 years, like different sizes and configurations and blah, blah, blah. But to be honest, I've always kind of struggled to find a massive use for
case,
it.
Yeah.
It's only actually been in the last 6 months since the iPad OS came out that I've really started to use it. And I'm actually planning to replace my laptop with an iPad Pro in the next few weeks. This isn't an advert for Apple, by the way, just to let people know. Yeah. But it's just weird. It has transformed the world in this 10 years, but it does only seem to be finding a proper purpose after that 10 years, which is very weird for a technology product these days.
Because when he came on stage, he was mentioning that, they need to find a device that does everything better than a phone, but not as expensive as a laptop, right? And you question that, has the iPad, before this new iPad OS though, has it actually done anything better than what you could do in a phone? Taking photos, definitely no, because, taking photos on your iPhone was way better than the iPads. But browsing the web, yeah, there'll be an argument. It's just on a bigger screen. But then, movies, it's on a bigger screen. But it gets tired after a while holding the iPad because, the early generations of the iPad was heavy and, it wasn't really user-friendly. It was really a gigantic iPhone.
No, absolutely. And I had one of the first generation iPad Pros and there really wasn't a purpose for it. It was a bit like
having the pros,
It was a bit like having a Proton with a Lamborghini engine. It's still a Proton. You know, it didn't do as much as the power of the machine. It's, like I said, it's only recently with the iPad OS that we've seen it jumping up to the point where it is more or less a computer. Yeah. Compared to the Surface laptops by Microsoft, which have been a fantastic hybrid of those two things, laptop and tablet, and have been around, I think, in various forms for about at least 5 years now.
Yeah, yeah.
Apple is very much behind the tablet game at the moment, only just catching up.
But they've sold remarkably well. Over 350 million iPads in the last 10 years. They peaked in 2013, but that's because, I guess, you know, many people just didn't have a reason to upgrade only recently when you see the new operating softwares, right? But what's interesting, if you see in the last 10 years, is, you know, there was a need for this third category of device, the one that's in between the smartphone and the laptop. But now, as we look at, you know, the better softwares, the iPad OS coming in, and then you look at Microsoft Surface, now there's that blurred lines between tablet and laptops, because you just said it, right? You're probably going to, you know, get the new iPad Pro with the new OS to replace your laptop.
And interestingly enough, because you tested out Samsung's Foldy phone last year, right? Yeah. So we're seeing more of these like clamshell devices that fold out from a phone into a larger screen. So we're seeing this kind of convergence from every side, I think. And we know that, Microsoft tried to do the laptop on a phone thing with the Windows phone. And I actually quite liked that version of the operating system. But again, I seem to have been about the only one. It was quite useful. You know, you could dock it and turn the phone in, because Android still doesn't lend itself that well to being a full laptop experience.
And, or a tablet.
But the Windows OS did have that ability to kind of scale between the two. So, it's a shame that didn't really take off, but it is an interesting category to watch.
And also, you know, I think it's like you mentioned, it's an interesting category to watch, but, you know, there are some things that you just don't do with an iPad, even in this new decade, and that is, like, you know, taking photos. I think tablet photography should die, because that's like the one thing that I do not like about the iPad.
No, I think we should all get 70-inch screens and take photos with those screens. So, you know, you take your selfie and it's immediately blown up to like 3 meters across.
Let us know what has been your favorite moments with your iPad. You can get in touch with us on Twitter. Coming up, we do have King of Culture. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Business-filled minds. BFM 89.9.
And we're back. It is Geek Squawk's King of Culture time. What do we have?
Well, today I am suggesting that we all take a bit of a notification break. So there was a nice article in the Guardian this week by a writer called Elle Hunt on this subject. And we do get bombarded with notifications all the time. I think one study back in 2014 found that users receive an average of around 63.5 alerts every day, and most of us view them within minutes.
Yeah.
And another study has also found that when you check that notification, it's as disruptive as actually taking a phone call, because it derails your consciousness. So I think that was a study with students, and it found it was as disruptive to their ability to concentrate. I think another study in 2016, this was by Deloitte, the average user checks their phone 47 times a day, often in response to alerts. To be honest, I thought it would be more.
Yeah. 47,
That's probably what I do between waking up and breakfast. But lots of these studies are coming out. It is beneficial to take a break from this. Yeah. You do feel the pressure and the stress. But interestingly, one of the side effects of this is that we may be blaming technology for a lot of the stress we feel, but it's not necessarily the technology. It's the pressure that we put on ourselves to perform. So the notifications just increase that stress level. It's not the device itself. It's not the technology itself.
But aren't they designed to make it like that? You know, with the pings and the red icons with the number of unread messages. Like, if it's red, it's like, oh, you know.
Oh, no, for sure. I mean, there is definitely an element of that. But, I mean, I haven't turned my phone on. I've had my phone on silent now for the last 5 years. You know, I just...
Same, yeah, exactly.
I just... I never turn it on. So, and very often I have it, I've just turned it over face down to prove that I have it turned down face down. But very often I have it turned face down as well, so that I don't feel that pressure to check. Obviously, I have a smartwatch as well, which vibrates all the time. So I'm having to readjust to that a little bit. But yeah, my tip for this week is just to mute your notifications. Check them maybe once an hour, once every couple of hours, and just don't feel the stress and the pressure of your WhatsApps, your emails. I mean, I don't feel the pressure of email anyway. That's why I've got 100,000 unread ones. But don't feel the pressure of these things because, I mean, I remember, I think it was 2 days ago, the phone just kept pinging, and it was from a food delivery service, and they were obviously having trouble with their system because all I was getting was a message saying test every few seconds for about 10 minutes. So, you know, it is incredibly disruptive. So just switch them off for a while. Take a break.
Actually, I've switched off all social media channels, notifications. So,
oh, yeah, but I'm saying for everything, you know, because I get like New York Times and BBC alerts.
I switch all of them off. And just like you, my phone's on silent or vibrating mode nearly the entire day.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
One day I'll pay someone else to carry my phone around and not answer messages on my behalf.
Well, if you're looking for a break or a vacation, perhaps in the near future, and if you're a gamer, you may like this story because there will be new hotels all around the US that will be Atari-themed. This new hotel will debut in Phoenix, Arizona, and it will be based on the Atari's iconic retro arcade games and also their consoles. Atari, as we know, you know, they were the pioneers of the arcade game developers back in 1970. So they've just announced plans of a new hotel designed with its IP in mind. They will provide a unique lodging experience combining the iconic brand with a one-of-a-kind video game themed destination. The constructions will begin spring this year, and once it's completed, it will mark the first of a handful planned locations in the US, and of course Las Vegas is one of them. Denver, Chicago, Austin, Seattle, San Francisco, and San Jose. Details is, I guess, it's very limited at the moment. We're really not sure what are they going to have in this Atari-themed hotel, but you can bet that it will be riding on the rise of the esports community because, you know, they've been making more than $1.1 billion just last year alone in you know, this gaming tournament industry, and of course this will only increase in value in the years to come. And also the locations where they're building the cities is known for, you know, esports and gaming. I'm a big fan of, you know, hotels trying to do things, you know, differently, because this is something I never thought of, but I'm like, I'm game for this.
I think this is an awesome idea. I do wonder if, like, younger hotel guests will really care so much about the Atari brand. Will it actually resonate with them? But I think one of the things it says in the article is that it's Steve Wozniak's firm, isn't it, who's behind it. So they're not sure what's going to actually happen with Atari's IP, how it's going to be adapted inside the hotels. But I'm hoping for things like you can actually play live-action Donkey Kong on the stairwells and all of this kind of stuff. That would be a really interesting way of bringing the kind of games to life. Obviously, it'll never be done because you'll be throwing barrels at people down a stairwell. But, you know, we can dream.
And Richard was saying yesterday that, you know, he hopes to see maybe like a three-story Pong table or something like that, right? So, you know, but it's also, I guess, new games.
No, what I want to see is giant paddles, but the people are the Pong balls. You just get whacked from one side of the room to the other.
I guess, you know, it gives an idea for other brands to do this. Because if you look at the image, it reminds me a lot of like, you know, it's like this 80s version of the future. And you just think like, man, if they actually built a Tron theme hotel.
Yeah.
you know, or a Star Wars themed hotel.
Or even actually a Pokemon themed hotel. That I mean, sell, it would work so well. Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to the rise of, I guess, you know, these kind of thematic hotels. We'll see what happens. Now, as I'm sure you all know about the devastating stories that are that's happening in Wuhan and also in various parts of the world about the coronavirus outbreak. And it is, you know, I guess it's very scary, especially if you look at some of the news that's been going around. And, you know, my advice is always try not to believe all the WhatsApp messages that you've been getting, because it is that season whenever there is a new outbreak that happens, or any, you know, world global phenomenon, that's always WhatsApp messages. So this is something where I guess in the future it will really help us, because near the end of the first week of January, the news of this deadly flu outbreak in Wuhan, China started to come mainstream media. The disease that started out in Wuhan has now spread to the mainland China and other parts of the world, even here in Malaysia as well. Among the first reporters was actually Blue Dot, which started notifying its customers of an impending outbreak as early as December 31st. Now, this is a Canadian company which specializes in automated infectious disease surveillance. They used a system based on artificial intelligence that combs through news reports, animal and plant disease networks, and official proclamations, and gave it its clients warnings of danger zones like Wuhan ahead of the outbreak. They've even got access to global airline ticketing data. The firm actually correctly predicted the spread of the virus from Wuhan to Bangkok, Seoul, Taipei, and Tokyo in the days following its initial appearance. They use machine learning, natural language processing techniques to prepare its model that subsequently sifts through news reports in 65 languages, airline ticketing data, animal disease networks, and they combine all that, and boom, you get a report that's generated from you know, the scientific standpoint of view, and it's then being sent out to, right now it's only to Blue Dot clients, but I feel this is actually a great way to control the spread of misinformation that you would generally see in this time of a season. My WhatsApp has been bombarded with, you know, messages that I just go like, that's not entirely true.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is definitely a task that AI can perform for us. Certainly earlier predictive models didn't perform as well. I think on various UN or WHO schemes, they've tried this kind of predictive modeling, and it hasn't come out according to plan. Like the diseases haven't hit at the times that were predicted, or they've come earlier, or they've come later, or whatever, or they haven't progressed in the same way. But as we've seen, even from, well, probably going back sort of best part of 10 years, Google has been tracking like flu viruses, again, with incredible accuracy. Mm. So these tools definitely have a massive role to play, especially in this kind of globally connected world where we do have these emerging viruses that that we don't have any solutions to.
Well, our advice is just, you know, wash your hands as often as you can, and, you know, carry some of those hand sanitizers and buy face masks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a friend of mine was, again, sending kind of nonsense stuff to me over WhatsApp, and that's exactly what I replied. Rather than signing this petition or doing this, I said, wash your hands and wear a face mask. That's always going to be the simpler thing to do.
All right. Let's see, what do we have for GeekTunes? Because you mentioned earlier on that we kind of already know what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, no prizes for guessing this if you listen to MSP. So again, this is going back to the show that we just did, which was about the rise of CGI actors. So this is L7 with Pretend We're Dead.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.